smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The topic of today's Good Dog Podcast is separation anxiety. And even as I say that, I wonder whose separation anxiety will we be addressing? Pet owners or the dogs? My guest is Trish King, Director of Behavior and Training for the Marin Humane Society. Welcome, Trish.
Thank you.
And I would bet that some significant percentage of the people who call you for consultation are calling you to focus to help them address that very topic.
Yes. There are two big behavior issues. One's aggression and the other one's separation anxiety. And a dog with true separation anxiety is harder to live with than a dog with, like, dog-dog reaction, you know, like aggression.
Because it's ongoing and constant.
Yeah, never goes away. It's one of those things that you have to deal with all the time, 24/7.
So you say true separation anxiety as distinguished from what?
As distinguished from what a lot of people think it is, which is essentially that the dog gets bored and overactive in the house and starts destroying things. So there are big differences between them. You want me to go into those?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And we should also talk about the difference between what a puppy might experience and what a grown dog experiences.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the case of just plain old dog, separation anxiety has very specific symptoms, if you will, or signs. First one is that a dog with separation anxiety won't eat when you leave them. So, for instance, when you tell people to, you know, stuff a Kong and leave it with the dog, if they don't eat it, that's one sign. The dog is trying to get out, generally. If they're in a room, they will try to get out of windows or doors. So they will do everything they can. They have bitten through doors, bitten through walls. It's an absolutely panic-stricken kind of a condition.
Throw themselves through the glass window?
Throw them through themselves through the glass window. Yesterday I had a separation anxiety consultation with a little dog who was absolutely adorable, and they got it from a shelter down in Fresno. And she brought in part of the crate, the metal part of the crate that the dog had chewed through and out of the crate.
Unheard of.
No, happens with separation anxiety. They make their mouths bleed, their paws bleed. They're absolutely panic-stricken. Sometimes they do a tremendous amount of damage in the house. As I say, most of it's to windows and doors, but sometimes their panic goes to the rest of the house, and they can just lay havoc to your house. My dog Strider had separation anxiety and still has it 6.5 years later. And it's totally under control now. I can leave him places and all that. But he still has it. I mean, he still gets anxious when I leave.
How have you gotten it under control, Trish?
Oh, there's a lot of things that I've done, which I can certainly talk about. But I wanted to do the differentiation between that and separation anxiety, or between that and destruction.
Sure.
Or adolescent behavior a lot of times. Some dogs just kind of throw a tantrum when you leave. They don't like it that you leave. They bark at you. Some dogs jump up and kind of bite at your pants. They act very panic-stricken. And then when you leave, they may bark, and they bark for probably maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and then they settle down and either go to sleep, or they kind of go to sleep for a while, and then they wake up and do some damage, and then they go to sleep again. And those are dogs that don't want to be left alone, but they can cope okay when you have left them.
Easier to train them out of that behavior?
Oh, gosh, yes. And I used to call it separating anxiety, because it's a separating process. So parents will know this if they remember their kid first going to preschool.
Absolutely.
You know, kids scream and cry, and after a while they go, oh, I'm not dead. I think I'm going to have a good time.
Right. Or the babysitter that reports, oh, yeah, he cried until you were in the garage, and
oh,
that was
right.
The end of that.
Exactly like that.
When he saw that it didn't work.
Mm-hmm. And they also, you know, if they do have anxiety, which a lot of them do, and they do miss you, but they still go, okay, you're going to come back, and they trust that you will come back. A dog with separation anxiety, if I can anthropomorphize a little bit, truly doesn't believe you're going to return. I mean, as far as they're concerned, you are gone.
Right.
And so they don't have this knowledge that you're going to be returning.
So would you actually call it a mental illness?
Oh, yeah. And it can be, there are some drugs that that can address this to a certain extent. And some of the dogs that I consult with, I talk with a vet, and we do put them on a drug. With Strider, I had clomicalm, it's called, sitting on my medicine chest for a year and a half. I did not want to use it, but I had it there in case I needed it. And if those kinds of drugs usually take 3 to 4 weeks to take effect. So they're really an antidepressant and an anti-anxiety pill.
And then do you keep the dog on it permanently at that
point?
No,
you put it on them for usually 6 to 8 months while you're doing behavior modification, and then you can kind of wean them off it. There are some dogs that have to be on it for their lives, but not that many, comparatively speaking. Most of the process is going through the behavior modification process, which is a lengthy process to begin with. And the problem is that we can't be very consistent about it. This isn't because people are not good trainers. This is because we have to live. So, for instance, one of the things you do to tell a dog that you will return is you leave for very short periods of time, and then you come back, and then you leave again, and you leave again, and you leave again. So you start off at 30 seconds, and you work your way up to several hours. Well, that's all very well on a weekend, but what do you do when you got to go back to work? You're leaving for 8 hours. So you make progress during the weekend, for instance. You go back to work on Monday, and the dog goes nuts. And usually there's more destruction on Mondays than there are on other days, oddly enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be because they had you all weekend long. So what people do is they get very guilty, so they spend a lot of time and attention with their dogs when they can. And then when they're gone, they're gone. Now, can you imagine the way a dog feels like this? For 3 days in a row, for instance, they are with their owner 24/7, or if not 24/7, much of the weekend or whatever your days off are. So then on Monday morning, suddenly they're bereft. So the first line of business with separation anxiety is to teach the dog that they have to be alone even when you're home, not all the time, but sometimes.
You put them in a crate, or you
put them in a crate. You put them in another room. You put them someplace else. Now, crate training with separation anxiety is problematic. It's fine for when you are home, but it's not very good to leave a dog in when you leave, and that's because not on top of separation anxiety they panic. So now you have a dog that's truly out of its mind with a fear and anxiety. So this is why they rip through the crates and whatnot.
But for many dogs, crate training is a great option, and having them be in a crate when you're gone can work, right?
Yes.
For shorter periods.
Yeah, but that's not a dog with separation anxiety.
Right.
If I had put Strider in a crate, well, I know what would happen because I did crate him, and he ripped right through it. We tend to, in this country, use crates for everything. People leave their dogs in crates for 8-10 hours a day, which I'm very, very against. I personally think a dog should not be crated for more than 4 hours. But, we do that because we don't want to have the destruction. But the problem is that we're not addressing the issue itself. The issue is that the dog does not believe you're going to come home, and they think they have either the right or the need to be with you all the time. So when you're home, the first line of business is to, leave the dog in one room while you walk out into another room, and then walk back in again, and then walk back out again, and just tell him he can't follow you every place. If he's really obnoxious about it, then you just tie him to a really heavy piece of furniture for a while or whatever. You don't let him lie on top of you. You don't let him get attention every time they need it. Some of these dogs will come up and poke their nose under your hand to get petted. Some of them actually lie on your feet. The one I had in for consult yesterday, the dog lay on her feet, and if she moved, he'd look up. It was like he was controlling her.
Sure, it's like very clear who wore the pants in that family.
Right, and she's only had the dog for 2.5 weeks, so this is, this dog glommed onto her. A lot of dogs that have spent time in shelters have anxiety because they're such social animals. In a natural world, they would never be apart from their brethren.
Right.
They wouldn't be. So
Also they ended up in a shelter, so who knows how bad the situation was that prompted their previous owner to give them up.
Or, if they even, some of the dogs that we get never really had an owner to speak of. They were kind of just a product of some happy pair down in the valley, and they're kind of almost street dogs. So, and they're, because they are social, they need you. They need people. So you have to do the separation thing to begin with. You have to actually say, look, you can be in the same house with me and not in the same room. It's okay. Some of these dogs will sit on a landing or in the middle of a house so they can keep an eye on you wherever you go.
You're describing my dog.
Yeah. Well, lots of dogs will do that. but ones with separation anxiety don't go to sleep while they're doing it.
Right.
You know, they're there. These dogs sometimes are exhausted. The little dog I was talking about from yesterday was exhausted because he has such a big job.
Right.
To keep an eye on his mom all the time.
That's a huge job, and he can't relax.
He can't relax. And the other members of the family, there's a husband and a daughter, the other members of the family, the dog is not that attached to. And so, like Strider, it depends. She is the one that he has bonded to. And so, like my dog, Strider, who you could have three or four people here, and he would still be looking for me, which is so flattering. But on the other hand, it's really a pain.
Yeah, it gets old pretty quickly.
It does.
So how do you counsel a client like this? Do you give her specific assignments and then tell her to come back in a week and report back as to how well it worked?
Well, they don't actually have to come back since the behavior problem doesn't pop up here. But we do have usually weekly conversations or every other week, whenever they want to, really. Not every day, usually. But essentially...
Hopefully.
But we start off the process by, you know, move room to room to room to room. And then, generally speaking, this might be a time when you'd use a daycare or you'd maybe have somebody come in your house or whatever, because you try to make it so that the dog is not being left alone for long periods of time. And in this woman's case, she's going to take the dog to work with her, but she can't do that permanently, so she's going to need to do the separation thing. And the dog has totally destroyed their bathroom, and, you know, they have to remodel their bathroom now. And this is a dog that's about 20 pounds. So it's just a little guy.
I would think that you would get a lot of dogs like this in the shelter from people who just throw up their hands and say, I mean, I cannot lose another room in my home.
I don't know. We don't know because they don't tell us.
Ooh.
You know, if people are surrendering a dog, if they think that there's a chance that the dog might not make it by what they say, they leave things out. So, you know, sometimes we don't know until after the dog has been adopted, and then it comes back, and they go, oh, my God, this dog did, you know, $10,000 worth of damage in the house.
And I would think there'd be no way to know when, for instance, getting a puppy, if that puppy would have some sort of predilection or
Well, you can pretty much figure that most herding dogs are going to... They have a predilection for it. But if you get a dog from the time it's a puppy, you can teach it not to have separation anxiety. That's a given. I've had lots of dogs that had the potential to have separation anxiety, but they did not because I raised them from the time they were a puppy. In the case of my German Shepherd, he was at least two, possibly three or four when I got him. So, you know, there was some prior history.
Damage had been done.
So the way you stop this kind of thing from happening is doing exactly what I was talking about before. Don't let the dog follow you from room to room all the time. Don't always give in to their attention-seeking behavior, and start leaving the dog alone right away. I mean, you know, if there was a study done on some wild dogs in Europe, and what they discovered was that the mom, when she was moving dens, which she did about once a week, she would, if she had four puppies, she would move one puppy, then the second, third, and fourth, and then the next time she moved, she would move one of the two that she moved second and third first. So that each puppy had a chance to be alone, all by itself.
So this is innate behavior.
This is innate behavior because they have to leave their puppies sometimes, you know. So the dogs need to know that you're going to come back. The worst thing we can do is to say, okay, I'm going to take 3 weeks off after I get this dog and just be with my dog the whole time. Because after 3 weeks, the dog is going, oh, that's what we do. This is how we do things.
The bottom line to all of this is that responsible pet owners need to do their research, need to look into all this, and know up front what is involved in creating not only a physically healthy dog, but an emotionally healthy dog.
Yes, and I think that what you said a few minutes ago with regard to certain breed predispositions and whatnot, I think that kind of goes along with it, that you have to understand how much activity your dog is going to need, how much exercise the dog is going to need, and whether or not they're going to be more accepting of being alone. So, for instance, a lot of terriers are just fine with it. They kind of go, okay, well, I'm busy anyway, so I'll see you later. Whereas herding dogs are probably going to say, no, I need to be with you. I need to be with you. I need to be with you.
Very, very interesting. Trish, thanks so much for all this insight.
Oh, you're very welcome.
A big help.
Yeah.
Trish King is the Director of Behavior and Training at the Marin Humane Society. I'm Joanne Green. Send a doggy joke along with your name and mailing address to gooddog@smarterpodcasts.com.